never want Steve Perry to end. Too bad Steve Perry ends all the time. Is Steve Perry even still around? He's like retired, right?
Is he?
He's like for real retired, right? Not like that fake retired stuff.
No, he's real. He's Cary Grant retired.
Yeah, like he's for real. He's not Cher and Barbara Streisand.
No.
Who was the other one that retires all the time?
Keeps coming back.
Tony Bennett.
Yeah,
Tony. Who was another one that retires all the time?
It's a woman. I'm trying to think who.
Garth Brooks. All the time.
Yeah.
He's retired every week and then comes back once a year.
Come back from the dead to record an album.
Welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron at www.thematthewaronshow.com. Let me click on the website. I'm curious what it looks like. I haven't been there in forever.
I've never been on there.
Have you never been to the website? I hear we have a website, and I hear it's fantastic. All right, so you go to thematthewaronshow.com. I'm actually going to go through all these steps I make everyone do today just to see if I'm lying.
Let's say what we're doing as we do it.
Yes. Okay, so you go to thematthewaronshow.com, and you will see today's guests are Judith Hogue, Kieran Darcy Smith, and Felicity Price. And then what else is going on? Oh, we're at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter.
Yeah.
The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. Mm. You go to the little search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show, you click like, and then you'll get all the updates about the show.
You can
all the crazy updates.
You can find us also on Stitcher and iTunes.
Yeah, yeah. And you can find Lee Capreas at?
Lee Capreas, at Lee Capreas at Twitter and on Facebook.
Is it at Lee Capreas?
Yes.
On Facebook, too? You could do that on
Facebook? No, on Twitter. I'm goofing up my...
How do people find me on Facebook? I'm private. I keep getting this.
Really?
Oh, it's through people, though.
How do people not find me? I'm here. I'm here every damn week.
Man, they must think that your Facebooks are like your rants on the show.
Yeah.
And they would be correct.
Even those rants have got to get me a few people, you'd think. It's like that cartoon when everyone's clapping for Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck comes out. And
I don't know. I think our audiences may be different. I think you and I have two separate audiences on the show here.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Sammy Hagar audience.
My audience doesn't expend a lot of energy. Maybe it's that. Maybe they're my fans, but they're not making themselves known because they're just lazy, like me.
Well, we're going to be bringing on Judith Hogue in a few minutes, but you know her from Nashville, and of course, if you're a child of the 90s, such as Lee Capreas and myself,
yeah,
not to age ourselves too much here, but April O'Neil from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The movie.
That's kind of big.
That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal for me.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. There's some comic book nerds sitting at home digging that.
The little bit of nerd in me is going to be coming out.
I know.
For this.
I'm looking forward to that. But I was just telling you before we started the show, because I'm like, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? Can I tell you how sad the modeling business is?
It's good to start on a high note.
Okay, so I go to these two screenings yesterday. I go to the second screening, whatever. It's in WeHo. And I meet this...
Our
pretty,
favorite neighborhood.
Right. I meet this pretty girl, and I meet her gay friend, and they're both models, and they're very nice people. Well, I don't know. Can you call yourself a model? I don't know. One of them works at H&M. The guy, the gay guy, he's a model at H&M. And there's a point to me describing him being gay in a minute. But and then the female, she did modeling for, I don't remember what she told me, but she did modeling, and it was a company I heard of, blah, 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 whatever. So anyways, they're both broke. And I go, how are you broke? You're models. You're working. You're an H&M. That pays. This is how that community works. It's like the popular crowd in high school. Where
right.
the popular kids all suck you in, and the popular kids don't have money either.
Right.
They use your money to spend for them. So what they did was...
Yeah, but the popular kids also, they usually have money. That's
popular. No, not here, though. Not here. The H&M model, who, by the way, made the most money out of anyone he was hanging out with, starts hanging out with these gay underwear models in WeHo. And I don't know the company, but it's underwear geared towards gay people.
Uh-huh.
So he's buying them drugs to fit in. He's paying for things on his credit card to fit in. He just wants to fit in. And then the female model, she has a bunch of catty female model friends who they all claim they're going to help each other out, blah, 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 and whatever. And she would suck her money into their needs and stuff.
Right.
So they were both trying to be good people and both trying to fit in. And these other models just sucked all their money up.
Right. Used
that business is brutal.
Yeah.
Is that what happens, you think, all the time?
That isn't even their, her... That isn't even like the industry abusing. It's other people.
No, it's
that your peers are worse.
Is it possible models are that awful?
It must be. But I was just saying, I don't think this whole the whole thing of being catty and backstabbing in the modeling business. I feel like that's something that's not inherent to it. I feel like people go into it thinking that that has to be a part of it. And they play that role. They voluntarily do that.
Right. It's part of the game.
I don't think that is espoused specifically by the
I don't know.
People just, who do the hiring.
We've been in this business now a few years. And,
10, 20 years.
Yeah, 10, 20 years. Right. Right. Since I was 9.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I've heard the worst stories ever. I mean, we got A-list buddies, we got B-list buddies. They've all been through the ringer, okay? They've all been through the worst that you can imagine. And I feel like I've heard the worst stories. These stories I was hearing from these models yesterday blow them out of the water. I mean, outside of Don Simpson and who's our other favorite I like to tease all the time?
Barry?
Yeah, Bob Evans.
Bob
Robert
Evans.
Outside of those lovely sex stories that everyone's read in those books.
Those tasteful gentlemen.
Yes. Or the stuff you hear in Peter Biskin's book. But, I mean, this stuff's pretty bad.
It's bad.
This stuff's pretty bad.
Right.
And it's not the Harvey Weinsteins taking advantage of the little people. It's the little people eating other little people.
Right.
That's what's crazy for me.
And doing it seemingly needlessly.
Yeah, that's nuts.
I mean, it's a competitive thing to get a job.
But this wasn't even over competition. This is, I need drugs.
In daily life.
I need drugs.
Yeah.
I need drugs. I need booze. Can you buy me some drinks at the bar?
And is it enough to just say, well, you take comfort in the fact that those people are all making their own choices and they're very greedy.
Well, they're kind of weeding themselves out, aren't they?
Not smart, and they'll weed themselves out. They ultimately are...
What do some of these... What are some of these skankier models? The ones that, like, do the
Yeah.
Do the
Wait a minute, sorry.
The lingerie and the under... And if you're a guy, the underwear ads... What kind of future do you have once you hit 26, 27?
Like, well,
are you done?
You try to be an actor at that point.
Yeah, no. Listen, I've met my fair share of models, and very few of them can act.
But some people do go from it to acting.
Yes, there
some
are
people
a few.
Do. But,
there are a few.
But can they get jobs? Are they black? Because you said they can't.
I don't think they're blackballed as necessarily. Well. Listen, I don't think it's like an out-there blackball. I think it's more of a, oh, he did undie ads for, you know, whatever. And I don't know. I do think people hold that against people. And then the other thing is,
really?
Once you're seen as a model, I don't think a lot of casting agents and directors then see you as an actor. They may say he has a great look, but let's read him and whatever. And that's always going to weigh you down. That's always going to weigh you down. The first thought all the time is going to be, this guy's a model. And, I mean, like us. That's what people think about us all the time. The first time they see us, they
just
go,
a couple of pretty
guys, pretty boy models. And, yeah, no, exactly.
Well, no, if you're a comedian, though, isn't it more dicey to hire a comedian? Just because they're such malcontents?
No, comedians, there's a lot of talent that goes with that.
Uh-huh.
The only talent that goes with modeling is
presumably.
Good genetics
right.
and working out all the time.
Right. So if you're just listening, once again, looks won't get you everywhere.
No, I think honestly, and I'm not just saying this because I'm an ugly son of a bitch.
Even in this town, that's true.
I'm saying honestly, once you hit a certain age in this town even, your looks start to fade.
Well,
and then you kind of have to fend off your talent.
Well, yes, but... But you said, we were just talking that you've been told you need to dumb down the act a little more.
Well, that's the other
thing. I think there's a benefit to being smart.
I don't know how much I buy that, though, right?
Your looks, yes, do fade, unless you're Nicole Kidman and you never go out in the sun. But ultimately, I think it's good to be crafty.
Pat Tobias
sent
me a list of 50 models turned actresses. Okay. Rosie Huntington Whiteley. I'm sure she's good. Yeah, she's in the third Transformers. So that was, okay. All right. Well,
was that at the top of the list?
First of all, yeah, that's number one. First of all, Michael Bay is known for hiring women to deliver five lines and not act. He's just known for it. That's his move.
Yeah.
I mean, and God bless him for it. Jimon Hansu used to be a model. He became a professional model at 21. Okay, well, that's nice. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah.
He's good. Let's see who else became a model. Kelly LeBrock was a model. How long did that work out for?
Oh,
telling.
Are you just
I'm sorry.
Go down
that's
the
not
list.
Right.
Lots of people go on.
Famke Janssen
was a model.
Awesome actress.
Yes, yeah, Charlize Theron
awesome
was a
actress.
Model.
Yeah, but this is all women. Where are the men? I want to see male models.
Other than Ashton Kutcher.
Right. And I meant act, you know, like good actor.
Right.
Like Jimon Hansu.
I thought we were talking successes.
Josh Duhamel's all right. He's an all right actor.
Okay.
You didn't like Vegas?
I've never watched it.
And I do not count Marky Mark, because Marky Mark had the Funky Bunch before he had Calvin Klein underwear ad.
Right.
Sorry. They go hand in hand. That doesn't count. Let's see. I mean, yeah, there's tons of women. Women don't count. I'm talking about men. Men are fucked. That's what I originally meant. Men are fucked. All right, women are okay.
I like
Channing Tatum was a model.
I like how we make a point and then Tobias sends something.
Channing Tatum's a model. He's all right. I like him. Ashton Kutcher's on the list. There's five men on the list, and it was Channing Tatum, Jimon Hansu, James Marsden, and whoever else I just said.
Okay.
Yeah, there's five men on the list. Six. Six out of 50 men that were models became actors. Josh Holloway.
Okay, so we...
I think I made my point
there,
though.
Yeah, you made your point.
I think I made my point on men are screwed. 44 out of 50 is not good.
No. You better learn to do something. Learn a skill. Learn to cook.
Yeah, right.
And cook. So just don't do it at our apartment.
Women, you could be models, successful models, and be actresses.
Yeah.
Men, we're stretching.
Ah, yes. There may be more opportunities for female models, but I think there are less opportunities for female actresses. Unless you want to be like
you think.
The size.
Oh, that's true, because you hit like...
Real roles.
Yeah,
no,
once you hit like 35, 40, you're done.
Yeah, there aren't any real roles.
Yeah, Josh Holloway, Ashton Kutcher. Pat sent me another list of just men now. Yeah, I don't even know half these people. Chad Michael Murray, I've heard of him. Whatever.
Well, anyway, in summation.
Yeah, but what happened to actors? Like people.
Yeah, it just you lose that. Your inner child dies, and you can't get a job.
When did actors die?
Your
like
inner
child. Community.
Here's the thing. Your inner child is still alive, and you need to keep him alive. The thing is, your inner child is not a child at all. He's Charles Napier.
Oh, is my...
Yeah.
Isn't Charles Napier dead? No, that's Charles Rocket killed himself.
Yeah, right.
Man, all the pop culture references on this show. James Marsden was a model, really? Tyson Beckford? Come on. Does Tyson count as an actor? Really? I mean, he's all right. Man, what happened to actors?
The Community?
Yeah.
There's no solidarity.
No, but what happened to... No. What happened to people that started out in theater and became actors and... Oh, I didn't
It's called England and Australia.
So speaking of Ashton Kutcher, I read this awful thing on Deadline.com
yesterday.
This
is the most dishy start to
it
a
is.
Subject we've ever...
Mike Fleming wrote an article about... what's his name? James Hall? Josh Hall? James Hall? James Hall. Whatever. We're going to call him James Hall. He wrote a script. Oh, by the way... And this is what Deadline.com does. They like to pretend like someone's an overnight success when they've been out here 15 years working.
Right.
So this guy wrote a script. He's already made a movie. He made a movie with Ashton Kutcher. He's made a couple of his scripts have gotten picked up. Well, now Spielberg's making that movie about that sniper that got killed. You know, he trained all the other snipers, and he helped him with PTSD, and then one of them turned on him and killed him. So he wrote a script about it. Spielberg picks it up. Bradley Cooper picks it up. Big deal. And Mike Fleming writes an article basically saying how he's an overnight success, even though he's been with CAA for 10 years and Management 360. So let's calm down about overnight success.
Okay.
But point of the story being is this guy wanted to be an actor, not a writer. And he wrote an autobiographical movie called Spread, which you and I have seen, I'm sure, with Anne Heche and Ashton Kutcher. You may not have seen it, but it's an indie. It's an indie from 2009. And he wanted to be an actor in it. And they go, well, we want to get a bigger name. So he finally gave up. He's like, okay, a bigger name, fine. He goes, can I have a small role in it? Ashton Kutcher says to this guy's face, you're not good looking enough to be an actor. By the way, the guy looks just like Caesar, who's not a bad looking dude.
But he's not good enough.
Not good enough to be an actor.
According to Ashton.
According to Ashton Kutcher, not good looking enough to be an actor.
Okay, can we talk about...
So I guess Gene Hackman sucks. He got lucky somehow.
Right.
I guess. Paul Giamatti. By the way, Ashton Kutcher couldn't tie Paul Giamatti's Velcro shoes.
No.
Okay? Are you kidding me? What are you giving him? What's
giving
that?
Me a thing about Spread.
Oh, Spread? Yeah.
I'm certainly going to go back
and
watch...
What's the guy's name so I don't screw it up? The writer. James Hall. Yeah,
James Hall. Well, I'm certainly going to go back and watch it now. Now I heard what...
Yeah, you don't need to go back
McGee
and watch
said,
it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that comment, though?
That's terrible.
That's awful, right?
That's awful.
And,
like, this is a guy... But wait a minute. He got fired from, was it one or two movies, because they said he couldn't act. The director said he couldn't act.
That's true.
That happened twice.
Kutcher's been fired from a few movies.
Yeah.
That's true.
So...
That's true. So coming from him, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And you know what really makes me...
You have to be an actor.
What really
say
boils
that.
My mind is... Outside of the film business, and he's not even really in film anymore, outside of the entertainment business, Kutcher invests in a lot of future tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, dude, you're supposed to, you invest in all these companies because you want to build towards a better future. But your better future secludes average looking people from working in the, being on screen.
Yeah.
What kind of future are you promoting?
People that you perceive to be average looking.
And that's what I'm saying. I couldn't do quotes in radio form, but
yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I just love that Ashton Kutcher's the judge of who's good looking enough for movies.
Right.
That just blows my mind.
What a Clyde.
And you know what really bothers me about this industry? You know, tons of people read that comment, and tons of people take offense to it, and no one will say a word to his face about it.
Of course not.
No.
No.
If Paul Giamatti bumps into him at a party and Paul read it, Paul would be like, "Hey, Ashton, how you doing?" And he'd walk away and he'd be like, "That guy's a cocksucker." But he wouldn't say it to his face.
No.
He wouldn't say, "What was with that comment?" It was rude. I tweeted Ashton today, and I mean, we got 30,000 followers. That's something. I should get a tweet back. I tweeted him. He didn't tweet me back.
No?
I go, "It's kind of a jag-off comment, Ashton. Did you really make it?" And I just asked him if he really made the comment. I said, "I'm not going to judge you until you let me know that you made it or not." And he wouldn't confirm nor deny. That's how I look at that.
So we've set the dogs on him.
That's what I say.
No, but that's terrible.
He's very rude. That's a rude comment, too.
No.
I'm not trying to be sensitive, but it's also rude.
Yeah.
If you told me that, and I just wrote a movie that's autobiographical that you're starring in as the guy that's basically me, and then you said I'm not good looking enough to deliver three fucking lines.
But
by the way, we're here at Tay Chicago. Is that? Did I forget that?
603 Hollywood.
603 North Hollywood Way here in Burbank.
Pizza, your Chicago dog.
I'm sorry, I was just in a bitchy mood. I'm talking modeling. I'm talking Ashton Kutcher.
But honestly, what
come
we were,
by and get
no,
a chopped
if you're,
salad.
If you work in the industry, and you're listening to this, and you think, boy, are these guys naive? Don't they know it's a looks-driven business? How do they not know that? I don't agree.
I don't agree either.
No.
I don't agree either.
I don't agree with
and
that.
And by the way, I got to tell you something, too. If it wasn't for the average-looking people that make really artsy films and that make really critically acclaimed films, I think people would have gotten sick of some of this bullshit that's put out in movie theaters every week as it is.
Maybe looks are the only thing that matters in the bland stuff that
do you know how many older people I know went to actually see Sideways in theaters? My parents' friends, all of them. And they hadn't been to the theater in like a year.
Really?
And then they started going to see more movies because of a movie like Sideways.
Right.
Now, if you don't have that movie, they didn't go that month. They didn't go that year. You know what? You don't have to be good looking to make good movies and good entertainment.
Or to have talent.
Right.
King of
Queens was like one of the top-rated shows for 10 years.
Right.
8 years.
Right.
Kevin James, last time I checked, not a hottie. Not a hottie. By the way, the Flintstones. That Fred Flintstone wasn't that hot. Am I wrong?
No, but you had the Wilma factor there.
Okay, how about Roseanne? How many pretty people on that show?
Oh, yeah.
Number one show for like 8 years.
All right. Okay.
I'm just saying.
You're not a big Laurie Metcalf fan, I take it.
Yeah, Simpsons, Homer. I wouldn't jerk off to Homer. Peter Griffin? I wouldn't jerk off to Peter Griffin.
No.
Nope.
I think a lot of... Okay.
I do know weird. I do know weird men who've jerked off to Lois.
Of course, I know a lot of people who are like, "That's a really hot cartoon."
Really?
Yes.
About Family Guy?
Yes.
Oh, that's so weird.
Remember when you first saw Roger Rabbit? How Jessica made you feel? You didn't know. You couldn't explain it at the time.
It was Kathleen Turner's mannish voice that really did it for
right.
me.
it was the cartoony hourglass figure they drew.
Here's Judith Hope.
Right. Maybe there she can shed some light
on hot cartoon characters?
On hot cartoon characters and perverse...
But she's like a hot cartoon character come to life.
Perverse, cool, worldly tastes come to life.
She's a hot cartoon character come to life,
I know.
Though.
She won't understand this discussion. She's good looking.
No, I think she will.
She's good looking.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to have that. Ooh, that's good talk. Let's talk to Judith Hogue about Ashton Kutcher's comment. I want to get a point of view of a veteran.
I love it.
Yeah. I think this is a good topic.
This is the best show ever we did.
Because, by the way, I think Jean Triplehorn's a good looking broad, right?
I do too.
But is she classically gorgeous?
No.
No, she's not.
No, but...
And she's a great actress.
She's a great actress.
You know what? Suck it, Ashton. Kathy Bates, she could kick your fucking ass.
Right, at acting.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, right. That's what I meant. She could also kick his fucking ass.
Well, while the pleasantries are being dispensed, can we just complain a little bit about the fact that we have no gas in the apartment until June 17th because of the goddamn gas company? Shut our gas off. Listen to this. No reason for it.
I told Tobias today. You go ahead.
There's no reason. There's no gas. And you called the gas company, and they said there's nothing going on with the billing. They had to create a new account for you, which they used as an opportunity. When can you get somebody to come out and turn the gas back on? Not even fix something. Turn it on. Monday. Oh, geez, that's a long way away. The 17th. In 12 days.
Yep.
That is ludicrous.
12 days without gas.
Like a goddamn doctor's appointment.
It's worse. It's worse.
It's worse for me. I cook every day. This is ridiculous. I got to say, the bureaucracy in this state is second to none.
It's bad.
I mean, you thought Chicago had some good bureaucracy. Mwah.
Chicago just has a little more crooked bureaucracy.
Yeah.
This is a lazy bureaucracy.
Chicago has classy bureaucracy.
No one's ever screwed me over in pricing out here. No one's ever hosed me when it comes to, like, add-ons or anything.
Right.
The only way this place hoses me... Yeah, I'm talking about the government. I'm not talking about this town. I get hosed by this town every day.
No.
But the government just, gas companies, electric companies, water companies, they just hose us by being generally lazy.
Right.
Really, really lazy.
Right. So the gas company is staffed by one guy.
Right. That's how it felt on the phone.
He's like, I could be there.
I said to him, I go, you know, the 17th's kind of unacceptable. That's like really, really far down the line.
Yeah, that's horseshit.
And he goes, well, I'm sorry, sir. That's the earliest we can do. And I go, how is 12 days from now the earliest you can get to have a guy come over and spend 15 minutes to turn on gas? 15 minutes to turn on gas.
And that affects, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Pat Tobias says you should tell him, how are you supposed to cook your meth without gas?
Damn right.
And that'll get him right out there.
I could use a lighter to cook my shit like a homeless man. Terrible.
That was funny.
That is funny.
By the way, I'm looking pretty Hollywood.
I'm the one person that cooks in Southern California.
Can we talk about how good I look right now?
You look great.
I do look great.
Your teeth look good.
I do look great.
It's like they're whiter today. Like you had some kind of a thing done that whitened them.
And I have more things to be done in the next few weeks.
Okay.
Looking a little tan.
Yeah.
A little bronzer action going on here.
That's just from driving around.
No, it's not. It's from my new tanning salon I go to.
You go to a tanning salon?
Level 5. I use the level 5 bed.
No, you don't go to a tanning salon.
I've been twice this week, and I'm going tomorrow before I go to Chicago.
You're
going to
come out looking like a...
Listen, I got to take Seacrest out, pal. Out. I'm working out every day.
Aha.
I'm looking good. I got to take some motherfuckers out. Maybe Mario Lopez will... I'll never catch up to Lopez, but that guy's been jacked since he was like 12.
Yeah, but that's
but,
all right. Screw him.
But Seacrest, done. Done. If I bump into him in an elevator,
it's
he's
going to
take me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be tanner, thinner. Not thinner. But I'll be in better shape.
Right.
That's what counts.
Right.
Yeah, by the way, there is a difference. Can I say this from going to the gym all the time? People, there is a big difference between fit and thin. A big difference, right?
You're fit. I'm thin.
Well, right. But do you know what I'm saying, Lee? Some people out here are like 120 pounds and 5'9".
Right.
And I'm talking about men.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
That's not healthy. Yes, you can see your abs because they're not abs, they're ribs.
I can see your bitch's heartbeat through a rib cage.
Right. Those are ribs.
Yeah.
It's not sexy. I don't know what women you think are impressed by that. They're not.
This is the complainiest show we ever did. I love it.
No, I don't think it's the complainiest. It's up there. It's
speaking
up there.
Of things that look good,
yeah.
I look good as well in something I have here. I haven't had any work done to my person, but I have a new thing that is available. I'm wearing my...
Oh, your Matthew Aaron Show shirt.
I'm wearing...
Which, by the way, you look great in.
Thank you.
Can I tell you how good these shirts look?
Yeah.
They look fantastic.
They look terrific.
I don't think we're selling any of them yet, but we're going to be selling them soon. We made some for the team, and then we're going to put them on sale to the general public, I believe.
Right.
But they're great shirts, and we'll keep them at a low cost because... I've never made any money. Why start now?
This is gonna be a whole new thing. We're gonna have mugs. We're gonna have thermoses.
Those shirts are great, though. And these aren't shirts you get made on the internet or something.
No,
these are professionally made.
These are good quality shirts. Yeah. Mikey Terzo did a fantastic job. I want to give a shout out to Mike Terzo.
Mikey Terzo. Yeah.
They are. They got the Matthew Aaron Show logo on them.
Did Pat Tobias get his shirt?
The new logo, which I still believe looks like an elephant taking a shit.
Yeah, it does. I agree with you. thank you, Caesar, for the elephant taking a shit
fits
logo.
Fits comfortably and snugly on my person.
Where's Pat Tobias?
Can we?
If I smell an Italian beef or a pie here at the Delicious Taste Chicago here at 603 North. Okay,
so
I need to explain why I'm plugging Taste like I'm plugging it.
Let me just give you a backstory.
Yeah, go ahead.
Matt is not only on a diet that he is sticking to religiously and doing a good job on, I must say, but also he can't have food for like hours because of his teeth thing. He got
his
teeth whitened.
That's right.
And he's on a diet. So he's seeing pizzas being made, and literally before we started the show, like 10, 20 minutes before we started the show, he's like, I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going out of my fucking mind.
Because the pie here is great, and here's what the pie here does to you. The pie here is so good, and it just knocks you on your ass, and you feel like, oh, man, my day's done, because that pie, that's what the pie does to you here.
Right, it does.
And
you need a whole afternoon.
Italian beef's good, and the Polish sausage is good,
yep.
And I'm looking at this menu, and I can't eat one thing because I cut out wheat out of my diet for the most part.
Yeah.
I eat egg whites every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 protein shakes a day.
You watch your bread.
And I usually have a salad or a gluten-free pizza or something like that for dinner. And, yeah, I really watch my bread. The first time I had bread in 2 weeks was yesterday. I had a Buffalo Bomber at Veggie Grill.
What's
so
a Buffalo Bomber?
Chicken.
Oh, chicken.
Chicken. And, well, it's right next to the Arc Light. There really wasn't anywhere else to eat.
Yeah.
So, I love Veggie Grill. Don't get me wrong, though. And I had some, like, kale.
Okay.
But it came with bread, and their bread is fantastic. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I got a chicken salad somewhere. Chicken salad sandwich. And I took the bread off and ate the chicken salad with my fork.
Why didn't you just get chicken salad?
It's sad. I'm a sad human being right now.
Well, did you do it because you wanted the experience of taking the bread off?
They were in a hurry, and I needed them to make something quick, and it was a sandwich joint.
Oh.
So I said, give me the sandwich, and then I ate it all with a fork. So we're here at 603...
By the way,
North Hollywood Way, 603 North Hollywood Way. And let me tell you something.
By the way, it's nice of Caesar to be doing the interview.
I know. This food is... Yeah, Caesar, today, you got to go. This fucking guy. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
I'm just going to yell at him.
So
don't worry about it. You're the one that's got to go.
So we're going to continue the interview
this fucking
here.
Guy. All right. Yeah, who is this fucking guy? See, she cusses. I like it already.
We like her.
I like it already.
You can cuss on this show.
Yeah, you can cuss here.
I already asked.
Oh, yeah. She already asked all the important stuff.
I love when they... You know what happens when they ask? 100% of the time, they go ahead and curse on the show.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Jim Pittick asked a few weeks ago, and he went to town.
Yeah. Oh, he did.
Yeah, everyone asks. Wow. You look great.
Thank you.
Yes. Very... Yes.
Okay,
are you
good?
Yeah. Oh, there she's remembering.
Hi. Let's bring this down a little.
You
got
to act like you're a karaoke or something.
There you go.
Stand up.
Well,
right.
See, I would need to be drinking if I was doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Have you done karaoke?
I have done karaoke. I did it. There's a place in Nashville called Santa's Double Wide Karaoke Trailer.
Where's this
and the
at?
Guy? Oh, it's. I have no idea. You know, I usually.
My
hop
dad lives
in
Nashville.
Oh, really?
Is that where you guys shoot?
That we shoot in Nashville.
Yeah. Okay.
And I find myself sometimes just being whisked along with my friends into a cab, and then we take off for parts unknown, and then we land it at Santa's Double Wide Karaoke Trailer. Fucking hilarious.
You
man.
Have no
That's
idea
great.
How you even... Santa's Double Wide Trailer?
Karaoke Trailer.
I kind of dig that.
Is it
I
a Christmas-themed karaoke place or a trailer?
Santa,
or a trailer
Santa
theme?
Runs the joint.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so Santa's behind the bar.
Is he like
and
in
double
a Santa
wide.
Costume?
You know, I hear he pulls it out now and again, but he's a fat man
he's
with a beard who everybody calls, hey, Santa.
He's jolly. He's just jolly.
Can I have a Red Bull?
And he's
vodka?
Like, only if you shake like a bowl full of jelly.
Right.
So we were talking about you before you came on,
uh-oh.
Judith Hogue.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
we
when
were.
My ears were burning.
We were talking about Big Love. We were talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We were
all
talking
that,
about,
all, yeah.
And we were talking about Nashville. And Nashville, for me, is kind of an interesting show because my family's just moved to Nashville.
Really? What? Why? I mean, it's a great place. Why, but...
It's
a great place.
That was what I said. Why?
Why? No, but what? Are they in the business? Do they sing? Are they music people?
No.
They are a Nashville Von Trapp.
It's funny she says that. Everybody wants to be in the music business in Nashville.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Everybody. It's as bad as here with actors and models.
It's so funny because being there, people would say, so, you sing? What do? You play? I'm like, nope.
Because every bar opens at 10 a.m. and they have live music at every bar, literally. In downtown, every bar, live music from 10 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day.
It's great.
Every day.
And you know what?
It is great.
It is the highest concentration of really talented musicians and singers and songwriters. And so you can get there at 10 a.m. and it's somebody who's fucking great. You're it's like a good show at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And throughout the entire day. There's even somebody, there's like a...
Well, it has to be. It's 10. You've been drinking for 4 hours.
Exactly.
Well, even at the airport, I'm at the Nashville Airport.
Well, it's 10. You're still up from the night before.
Right.
They had two people playing in different parts of the Nashville Airport.
Right. And they were good.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah.
They were good. It's really sad because 90% of them won't make a dime off it.
What was your thing about Nashville? You were about to say you're...
Oh, so it's just really intriguing to me. First of all... So I started watching the show a bit because it's soapy.
It is soapy.
It's not totally something I thought I would dig, but Connie Britton's great.
She's kind of hot.
She is really hot. Do you karaoke with her?
Could you imagine a night with Connie and Judith
on the
we
town?
We had a great time. We went to Pink together.
Did you?
Okay.
That was fun.
Did you?
Are you a big Pink fan?
You know what? I like Pink.
Yeah.
You see her show? I became a devout fan.
Did you get to meet her?
Hot. I did. She was staying in my hotel.
Oh.
So I saw her the next day.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh.
Cool.
Hi. I took one look at her stomach, and I was like I want to lick your belly.
Oh, my gosh.
Such a belly.
Well, how I feel about her belly, too.
She's got like this man's belly, this man-woman belly. It's like the
hottest
thing.
Oh, she's like really ripped, huh?
She is ripped.
She has man hands of the belly?
She kind of does. It's super hot. And and she, like, does the pole, and she's all up
Go on.
Flying everywhere.
Go on. I feel like I should be giving Judith dollar bills while she
there
tells
you go.
This story.
There you go. She inspired me to go do pole dancing, to take a class.
Are you taking a class?
Yeah.
You did a pole dancing class?
This is Cruz. Right here, fresh. It's called a pole kiss.
From where? Wait, where are you pole dancing at?
You
is
got
it
some
in L.A.?
You got some brass love.
I have some brass love. I'm doing it at the S Factor, which is Sheila
is
Kelly's
in LA?
Place. Yeah. Yeah. It is so hard.
I don't think I'm signing up for that one.
It's hard, man.
Factor. What's all the classes? What happened to just running on a treadmill and lifting weights? That's what I do.
Everyone gotta keep yourself...
Everyone does spin and...
I spin.
Zumba.
No, I don't Zumba.
No, you're not Latino.
I do yoga and
Pilates?
I do Pilates.
Okay.
Pilates. On a reformer.
All right.
Which
what
will
kind
kick
of yoga?
Your ass.
Have you regular done Barry's yoga? Boot camp?
I have no desire to do Barry's Boot Camp.
No, me either.
You're already thin.
No P90X?
Because I do Pilates and I pole dance.
That's right.
That's true.
Like Pink.
The women's, the pole dancing classes, women are, they're popular.
They're pretty,
they are
they're
popular.
Pretty, yeah.
They are popular.
For a reason.
Yeah.
There's no men allowed in those classes.
No, they're not. And they all want to be there. And trust me, they all want to be there.
No, I know they all want to be there.
It's a really interesting class. Because
Judith, I've walked by the classes and I'll do the three or four walks back and forth. And I'm not even that interested. I'm just looking.
Oh, yeah. Well, this one you can't see into. But last night was how to strip your shirt off. I was like, really? We have to learn that?
So it's not just dancing that they've incorporated stripping into the pole dancing canon?
Yeah, and I think next week is lap dancing.
Wow. Is that like girl-on-girl lap dancing?
Well, yeah, who are you going
to
practice on?
Clap.
Of course, so they have to...
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to put a GoPro in Judith's
classes?
Gym bag.
Yeah.
You know what I love is that also...
And that'll be on ABC.
Judith was also in like 1,100 TV shows.
I know.
Yeah.
But
no,
right
this
now,
is way more
right
fascinating.
Right now, the pole dancing is really taking up a lot of my...
And this is what Pink has done for me.
That's
okay.
What Pink did for you.
She
so
did.
When you met Pink, how did this conversation go? You
well,
walked up to
really
her
well,
or what?
She
walked up to you
to
what?
She was coming down to the lobby and she was coming down with her husband and her daughter. And I will say I was hanging in the lobby a little bit stalking her. because I saw all the big black SUVs out in the front, and I knew that she was staying there. And they were cleaning my room, so I thought, because I live in a hotel when I'm there. And I thought, I'm just going to hang here, because I bet Pink's coming. And she did. and
like a groupie.
I walked up to her, and I said, I don't mean to bother you, because she's with her husband and kid. And I said, but I just saw your show last night. And she said, hi, I'm Alicia. And she
you're
said,
on first
my daughter,
name with
my
her.
My husband and I said it was such a great show, and she had incorporated her family into it at the end, and that so it was brief. You know, you don't want to get up all in her face, but she was lovely, and I had my fan moment. I was
very
so
nice.
Excited.
I like Pink.
That's very nice.
I think
she's
great.
She's really cool. She's
yeah.
Really cool.
Who else do you like?
Who else do
Did
I like?
Did you like Madonna?
I like Madonna.
I'm not so into new Madonna.
Yeah.
She's not belly looking good.
Yeah.
No. Well, she
oh, no,
is.
You would totally lick Madonna's belly.
Yeah,
come
I just don't know if I'd lick her face
tell me,
anymore.
If she was
but
standing here, you would not lick her belly?
I would lick her belly, but mostly for the story.
Yeah, well.
I have a feeling if she was standing here, you
I would
totally
I would
lick her belly.
I would do anything if she was
not
standing here, because I don't want to be rude.
I don't want to be rude. I'm not a tremendous Madonna fan, but it's definitely a belly that couldn't be missed. In terms
Listen,
of
I've
I'm
taken
just
us
not a
right
rude guy.
Into the toilet, haven't I?
No, you haven't. No. I lick everybody's bellies. Usually when we're not doing a show here, I stand at the door and just lick every
when,
belly that
when
comes
when people
in.
Come in, hey, welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome
right.
to Tay Chicago.
Welcome. Chicago.
Slurp.
Big slurp. Yeah. So wait, all right. So you
okay.
are in amazing shape, though. So spin.
Thank you.
Okay, spin. Yoga,
Pilates,
and pole.
Strip.
And
okay.
I run.
Oh, I mean pole.
And
oh,
you run.
You run.
And
what
I
do you run, like every day?
No, I run a couple times a week. I
and
try to do something
outside,
like
treadmill.
Outside. Got to run. Got to listen to
your music. You're one of those
music.
Outside runners. I
yeah,
hate running
I'm a lone
outside.
Wolf. Don't talk
I
to me.
Do
I don't want to run in a pack.
See, I don't want to see people.
When you're at a stoplight, do you run in place?
I run at a park.
Oh, like a normal
right.
running.
Like
right.
A, yeah, yeah. Okay.
How many miles would you say you run?
I run probably a minimum of 3 and probably a maximum of 5.
Okay. A minimum of 3? I run 3 every day. I want to die.
Oh, honey.
5?
Yeah.
No, you're talking crazy. Well,
oh,
maybe
yeah.
when I'm in shape like you, I can make
yeah,
it to
well,
5.
Yeah, well, I ran a half marathon a couple years ago. I'm thinking about
really?
Doing it this year.
I
I'm
smoke.
Not sure.
That's
oh,
not going to
well,
happen.
Well, hello.
Me. That's not going to
yeah.
happen.
Yeah, you got to cut that
I
shit
sit,
right
no,
now.
Oh, hell no.
We got to get
I
you some pole dancing
late at night,
lessons.
Put
yeah.
my feet up, have some
cigarettes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. That's the highlight
smoke,
of the day.
I smoke, put out my cigarette, and walk into the gym.
There you go. You're that
what
guy.
I do.
You're
I
like
am that
John
guy.
Candy and Splash. He's like drinking a beer, smoking a
I lose
Brett
weight
and
I'm still
squash.
The fat guy. I can't even get into good shape.
Hey, John
I'm
Candy's not a bad
John
thing
Candy.
To be. Not a bad
well,
thing to be.
God rest his soul.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the best. He was the best.
He was.
All right, so talk
another
to
Chicago guy.
That's
oh,
yes.
no, he's Canadian. I take that back.
Well, he was Canadian. I know
but
his,
he worked with John.
I know his daughter.
John Hughes, who
yes,
was a
John
Chicago
Hughes.
Guy.
Right.
I know his daughter, Jen. and they lived in Chicago.
She's
a
been
lot.
On our show.
And
has
actually,
she?
John has a
He's
building
so cool.
in Chicago. He had a building, an apartment building. And I don't know if they still own it or not, but John owned a whole building there.
His performances, John Candy, hold up over the years.
Did you ever get
so
to
well.
Meet him?
Never got to meet him.
No.
Would have loved to have met him. Would have loved to have worked with him.
Because I was going to say,
cool
you
guy.
Were taking off around the time of like Uncle Buck and
yeah.
Only the Lonely.
Yeah.
And,
right.
Yeah. And maybe you got to meet him. I guess not.
Yeah, I got to meet a lot of people, but I did not get to meet him.
Who was your favorite person you met like back in the 90s?
Oh,
give me some 90s.
I would say like one of my favorite people was Robin Williams.
Really?
Oh, right. You're in Cadillac.
I've never heard a bad thing about him.
He's such a great guy. He was like my second cup of coffee in the morning. You have the first one, and you're sitting in the makeup trailer, and in comes Robin, and he's like the second cup.
He's being Robin. And
he's being Robin, and he was the one, because when I was shooting, I did a movie with him and Tim Robbins and Fran Drescher called Cadillac Man.
Yeah, Cadillac Man, yeah.
And I started shooting Ninja Turtles at the same time, or we started pre-production. And so I would leave on the weekends, and I would go and fly to North Carolina from New York City to start pre-production and start shooting. And so I had never heard of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles before, and I didn't know anything about it, except that now I was like the lead in the movie. And so people were saying, so what are you doing? Where are you going on the weekends? And I'd say, well, I'm doing this movie. What's the title? It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And Robin went, what? Oh, my God, they're making a movie? Are you April? I was like, yeah, I am. He's like, and he thought it was the coolest thing. He's collected all the comic books.
Yeah.
Such a fan, and came to our premiere. So
yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, he's the
coolest
guy.
So it was like, oh,
ever.
Robin says it's cool, it's cool.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's a nice man.
So you weren't aware when you were starting with Ninja Turtles, you weren't aware that, like, I'm being in this thing, and it's like a little thing, but it's apparently, like, the biggest craze in the world right now?
Not a clue.
Yeah, you had no
idea.
I
think that's good, though, don't you?
Yeah.
I think it's good, because you go in, it's like, you're
well, you know what I find
well, maybe you're more relaxed.
About you? I find interesting that you, there's nothing good or bad about this. It's just interesting to me. You're like the only person I know who did something insanely, insanely geek popular.
Yeah.
Who doesn't take that act on the road?
No, I've
you
never
don't.
Done that.
No, everyone else does.
Yeah.
Everybody else.
Well,
does.
You know, they just did the most I've sort of done with it is they just have done this documentary that was like 3 years in the making. It's sort of like the total Ninja Turtle story that covers the comic
well,
books
that's
that
different.
Covers the
that's cool, but
so
you won't
that,
go to Comic Con.
Well, I would with that documentary.
Yeah,
and I would, but I don't, you know, I don't know. I have to say that now, like I'm starting to appreciate like how important it's been to so many people's lives.
Yeah,
yeah.
All these young people who still love this movie, who are introducing their children to this movie.
I mean,
movie,
I would just imagine people would be way more into you than Tia Carrere. I mean, you see Tia at all these Comic Cons. I don't even think she's been in a Comic Con stand.
We also grew up with Tia
great,
in Wayne's World.
Like,
that was another big part of my... That
yeah,
was
but
like Comic Con
nerds, Wayne's World, that's pretty much separate.
Yeah.
So if you're at Comic Con, you probably have more people who might know you from like
that's
Halloween
Town. That's what I'm
Town.
Saying.
Oh, yeah,
Halloween
that's possible.
Town. Yes.
I don't know.
that's good.
I have never... done. I mean, because I'm really like I work on something and then I move on.
Yeah.
And I love that people love it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Know? I really do. I think it's sweet. And,
yeah.
You know.
Well, we're pretty. I was a pretty hardcore.
Were you?
I almost.
Oh, yeah.
I almost hurt myself really bad because of the Ninja Turtles.
What did you try? You tried to flip or do?
No,
something.
No. Worse than that. I got some pizza and I went into an open sewer to hang out. And I got stuck, and I was in grade school, and I was screaming, and the firemen had to come get me out.
For real?
Yeah, I got pizza, and I put crazy stuff on it, like the turtles. I put hot fudge and cucumbers on it. I went to hang out in the...
How old are you?
I was in, let's see, it was third grade, second grade?
Do you know how, like, crazy
fourth grade?
Adorable that is?
Yeah.
That's, like, crazy
adorable. Yeah, it's...
No, I think that's really sweet.
Yeah, that was called The Day of Tears.
Misguided, completely misguided.
In my life,
but really sweet.
That chapter is called The Day of Tears.
Yeah.
I don't
did
know
you
if
eat
I was
pizza?
That dorky.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, well, you had nothing to do down there.
Nothing to do. Nothing to do until they came with the host.
Did you meet any rats?
No, I didn't meet any rats, but I'm sure I had roaches crawling on me. It was gay. I was walking home. No one knew I was there. It was bad.
Yeah.
Very bad.
Do other actors, like when you're doing Nashville, does anyone come up to you about turtles?
Oh, my God, all the time.
Yeah, right.
All the time.
Are you sick of that or just like, oh, it's cute?
No, because everyone's really nice about it. Like, I don't seem to attract, like, crazy fans.
Yeah.
So
nerds are very sweet fans, aren't
really
they?
Really sweet.
No, but even, like, on
really
the set.
Sweet. On the set. Well, we'll have PAs. We'll have other actors.
Right.
And
oh, every PA.
You'll see this look. Like, you'll start talking to someone, and then, like, they get the look. And you're like, oh, here
you know
it comes.
When the look is?
Here it comes.
Yeah.
Cadillac man.
That's never going to happen. And it's funny. Some people won't admit it for a while. And then
really?
They have to admit it. And then they're like, okay, I have to tell you something. I don't want you to take this wrong, but... you were like my first crush of my whole life, and I'm just being really cool right now.
They wanted to let you know that they were exercising considerable willpower, not being creepier than that.
Right now.
And I love how they say right now. Like,
right
when
now.
Are they not going to
be
cool?
Yeah. Apparently when they get
happening.
Home.
And the ride home in my Dodge, we're going to be
home.
Quite
yeah.
creepy.
I've got my Pinto outside.
Oh,
yes,
man.
If you're interested, maybe if we can go...
So this Nashville, though, is a crazy show.
It's kind of cool.
There's
it's
a lot of drama.
Huh?
It is a little addictive.
Yeah.
It is a little addictive.
It's fun.
Let me just tell you about the season finale, because that's past,
right?
We can yap about it now or no?
Oh, totally. It's done. It's premiered.
Okay.
Pat's like,
oh,
okay.
That puppy up.
So all I know is at the end of this, and now I got to go and watch the other episodes. There was this dude, and you're going to have to help me with names, because this is, like, big for me, all
right? Right.
All right, so there's this guy, he's going out with this girl, and they break up.
Gunner.
That's it.
Right.
Thank you. And then he's making out with the dude at the end of the episode.
He's not making
out
with him. They kissed. Right.
They kissed. Right?
Because Will is gay.
So I'm hooked now. I'm in.
Right. Guys kissing, I love it.
I'm in. That's all. And then Hayden
Panettiere's
out.
He's an Abercrombie model. We're all like,
all
right. We'll take his shirt off.
All right. Thank you for bringing that up. So we were talking.
You just hit the Pee Wee's Playhouse word of the day.
She sure did.
Ding, 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 all right. Ding, ding, ding.
Here's the thing. Most
do I get a prize?
Most models suck as actors. Let's just get
he
that
doesn't.
Out of the way. I'm not saying he does, because I haven't seen enough of his work.
Right.
I read Ashton Kutcher said something yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He said something. They did an article on Deadline.com. Mike Fleming Jr. wrote it. Mike Fleming's great. And Mike Fleming wrote an article about Jason Hall, who wrote this great script for Kyle Snyder, the sniper in Texas. That you heard this story?
Okay, no.
Okay, he's a sniper in Texas from the military who used to take other veterans in because they have PTSD,
right?
And he would help them get through their tough times.
Right.
And one of them turned on him and killed him. Okay, so the guy writes the script.
Right.
Now, Mike Fleming Jr. was acting like this was like, you know, the big breakout moment. It could be whatever. But he made a script a few years ago that got made called Spread with Ashton Kutcher.
Uh-huh.
And Jason Hall wanted to have a small role in it. And Ashton Kutcher said, you're not good looking enough to be an actor.
Ooh.
What do you think of stuff like that?
I think that's not true.
I don't either.
Yeah,
we were arguing.
I mean, there's, look at Paul, what's his name?
Giamatti.
His name? Paul Giamatti.
That was our example. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I mean, Edie Falco, who to me is a very beautiful woman, is not classically beautiful.
But we were talking about someone you worked with who I think is not classically beautiful, but beautiful to me is Jean Triplehorn.
Jean Triplehorn is really attractive to me.
Oh, my God, she's so beautiful.
I think she's beautiful.
Super talented.
But I don't think guys would look at Jean Triplehorn and think Pam Anderson.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I mean, that's why I completely disagree with it. I mean, look at somebody like, there's a million people out there who, so many people who are in Judd Apatow movies.
Right.
Right.
You know,
it's different with comedy, though, I think, though. But
I don't. No, I think if you're a good actor and you're really truthful and honest, I think people will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a good story, I think they'll love you.
And I'm saying, are people listening to this thinking we're naive for saying that? Like, it's.
Well,
hello.
I think Ashton was a little naive for saying
that.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of
dickish.
Well, it came out of Jason Hall's mouth, so maybe Jason Hall.
So who knows if Ashton actually said that.
Right. Well,
you didn't just go on a tear on Ashton and not have a confirmed.
That's right.
That's right.
Anyone that cute wouldn't say things like that.
Let me ask you, though. So then you said the guy that plays Gunner is an Abercrombie and Fitch model?
No. The guy who kissed Gunner, who plays Will.
Okay. He's a model, right?
He was.
Okay.
He was.
So what do models have to do to be successful like him, to be good, actors? You can't just go from modeling to acting,
right? I think you have
to
have talent.
Right. And how
I think you have to, I don't know, I don't know. What would you have to do? You'd
well, what's
have
the
to...
difference? Because you've done a lot of work, and you've worked with bad actors, and you don't have to name
right.
any bad actors. But what's the difference between a really good-looking former model who's a good actor, like this
uh-huh.
Will guy, okay? And then what's the difference between a bad actor who's really good-looking?
They're just really stiff.
Yeah.
They're really stiff. They don't really connect with you. They, you know, it's like, oh, you watch it. You're kind of like, you're doing a scene with them, and like you sort of leave your body and watch them and go, ooh, that's painful.
Yeah.
Ooh, you're not going to like watching this.
Do you tend to notice from the people you worked with that are stiff and not very good, are their careers, what's the longevity with
them? Not that long.
Okay. Thank you. I feel way better now because she is concluded. I'm absolutely right.
Are we vindicated?
I feel very vindicated.
Not that long.
You did work with two people I know.
Who?
You did an episode of Private Practice with Kate Walsh.
Yes.
Correct.
It was our buddy.
She's a hottie.
And then.
Yeah.
And a sweetie.
Yeah.
I love her. Isn't she amazing?
She's lovely. I like her a lot.
She did our pilot.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yes. And she was the greatest.
And
she's so
beautiful.
And
beautiful.
She is smart.
Yeah, but she was also, I mean, again, she's a lot like you. Just doesn't have a filter in the best way.
Can
yeah.
I tell
yeah.
you about Kate
you
Walsh?
Can't have a filter.
Let me tell you a Kate Walsh
well,
story. Because I want
to know. I
want to know if you relate to this.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you a makeup story.
Ooh.
Okay. Because I want to see if this is like. So we're filming in HD, right, for this
right.
pilot, and it's Kate Walsh and Dermot Mulroney and Common and Lucy Lawless and Joe Carnahan.
So you couldn't get anybody, huh?
No, we couldn't
I'm
get anybody.
I'm sorry.
But my point was, so Common comes, very minimal makeup. He's
right.
black. I don't know if you know.
He's so hot.
He is. He's great.
Yeah.
And then you
good
got Dermot
good.
Mulroney, also really good looking.
Right.
Doesn't need a lot of makeup.
Right.
And then you got
we're girls.
You got Lucy
like,
Lawless. Lucy pretty much went au natural, and she looked
oh,
gorgeous.
Wow,
she
wow,
looked
wow.
great. Kate Walsh shows up, and I'm like, oh, man, she's wearing some interesting makeup choices, in my mind, right?
Right.
Right.
But let me tell you something. I think she knew something I didn't know. So for months, we're editing this, and I'm like, Kate's looking a little orange here and a little too bright red here. And then we put in HD, and she looks
Bam.
Perfect.
Bam.
Because she's
what?
Used to, you know why?
She knows what HD.
She knows, well, because that's what they shoot Private Practice on.
I mean, so
right.
are you good like that, though,
and
is what I'm saying? Like,
well, you, yeah.
Can you, you would have a different face today if we were shooting HD anything,
right.
correct?
I would probably just have, yeah, there would probably be a little bit more on, not
yeah,
a lot.
Right.
There are certain colors that in HD turn corals turn brown.
She's so
certain,
smart. It
yeah.
blew my mind how
she,
good she was
she
about
that. She called
that
one from like miles away.
It blew my
right.
mind.
Yeah.
She's protecting herself.
I know. Yeah. She looked no, but she looked amazing.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
she looked amazing regardless.
Well,
yeah.
She
looked,
yeah, she would.
Great.
But no, there's a whole, you know, there's a whole technique to high def cuz high def can be really tricky.
Yeah.
It sort of takes like the first time I remember walking into like Costco and they've got those giant TVs everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And seeing, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, and you could see, like, broken capillaries in Keira Knightley's eyeball.
And by the way,
right.
those TVs, they don't last, like, that good
right.
when you
well,
buy them.
But it was,
no.
it felt like the whole thing was shot on video in somebody's backyard.
Yeah.
And it sort of took that veil of movie making away.
Yeah.
So I think HD is great for sporting events and, like, you know, shows,
yeah.
award shows.
And
so
for Nashville.
Really see what people
and
look
for
like.
Nashville.
Well, no, but
I'd rather have filters.
Oh my!
I'm always like, put cheesecloth over the lens.
Yeah,
put
right.
Vaseline on the lens.
Yeah.
you know.
So I thought she was amazing.
Yeah.
She's the
she's
best.
Great.
And then you also did an episode of Criminal Minds with Joe Mantegna.
Yes.
Whose place this is.
Arlene
yes,
Mantegna.
I know.
Arlene owns Tay Chicago, and isn't he the greatest? He's like the nicest guy
great.
Ever.
Great. We never had scenes together.
Yeah.
We mostly just would say hello and chat a little
sweetheart.
Bit. But such a great guy.
Yeah.
He's
such
like,
a great guy.
He's like, hey, you're April.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I'm being totally cool right now.
Yeah, right.
I'm just being really cool right now. But I'm going to flip out when
I would
my
love
car.
To find out Joe Montana is secretly a TMNT fan.
He's no stranger to cartoons, as we know.
He loves pizza.
Yeah, he loves pizza.
Who doesn't? Come on.
So let me ask you more about Nashville, though.
Okay.
So the ratings for the season, like every show this season, were like really high, really high, it went back and forth.
You know why?
Yeah, why?
Because the way that the network chose to air the show was like 2 new episodes, 3 reruns.
Right.
A new episode,
isn't that crazy?
2 reruns. So, like, how do you get an audience to follow you
and to
pay attention to the show?
I agree.
A million choices. It was like not the smartest
Would
move.
You say what was really big for this show was the soundtrack?
Oh, huge. We have T-Bone Burnett.
Listen, we got T-Bone Burnett making
songs.
Yeah.
Who's the coolest guy?
And listen, you guys put out that soundtrack. It's like number one on
I
the
know.
Billboard.
Right.
So, I mean, the thing is, even if I'm Lee running ABC, I'm like, all right, the show did pretty well this year. Give it room to grow.
Right.
And keep putting out those fucking soundtracks.
Yeah.
Put out the soundtracks. Run the shows consecutively.
Right.
If you've got to take a break, take a break.
Yeah.
Do a spring break and then come back. But the way that they did it, I think, didn't help us. And I think it was on the strength of the music. And our ratings in the end were great.
Were really strong.
Because it was brand new episodes.
Your ratings for the season finale were the highest of the year.
Right. Well, it's just refreshing to see TV shows that aren't about lawyers and cops and doctors. Not that that's not gripping drama,
but it's something different.
Something different. Were you a fan of country music or follower of the country scene before you
Not
did
really.
This?
No? I could tell.
I'm a rock and roll girl.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I like it. You know, country music is really a great genre. And when you go to places like the Bluebird Cafe and you hear these songs that these songwriters are writing, you know, it's like poetry. And there's a lot of humor in country music.
Uh-huh.
It's great. Well, I'm walking over to that side.
Country music is something for me that is either really great
or really bad.
Well, no, there's real country, and then there's basically pop rock with a slide guitar.
I like both.
I like my country to be about you know.
Do you like your country with a little bit of rock and roll?
A little bit of rock and roll, but
just
like songs about like slapping your wife and going to jail for it and getting out of jail and trying really hard never to do it again.
Yeah.
That's
what country artist do you like?
Who do I like?
Not Kenny Chesney, right?
I honestly couldn't pick
Me
out
either.
A Kenny Chesney.
Me either.
So I like the classic stuff. I like Willie Nelson.
Okay.
Yeah, there
I
you
like,
go.
I like
Hank Williams Sr.
Emmy Lou Harris. I like, you know,
all right, here,
on the side.
Here comes the feminine in me.
Yeah.
I like Sugarland.
I like Sugarland. Oh, I just
Hunter
met
Hayes.
The,
and
yeah, yeah.
You do?
I've met the guy in Sugarland. What's his
name? Oh, I don't know. I know Jennifer.
I met that.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And she's great.
And then I met Hunter Hayes.
He's
over
great.
Wherever, yeah.
He's great.
So, and he's really good. And I saw him because I went to a Carrie Underwood show at Staples in L.A. And Hunter opened the show.
Yeah, he's opening
he
for
great.
Carrie. Carrie's great.
She was great.
See?
There's good stuff. Yeah.
There's good newer stuff.
There's definitely good newer
stuff. I'm not as huge. You know who I don't get? And you probably love these people. I've never heard a bad thing about them. But I'm not. There's a couple good Faith Hill songs. And there's a couple good Tim McGraw songs. But I'm kind of like, eh.
I have a friend who
I know they're like
Mr.
and Mrs. Hollywood Nashville. So people love them.
I have never met them.
Really?
Tim seems
perfect
they're lovely
for the
people.
Show.
He'd be great on the show.
Right.
He'd
He's
be great
a great
on the show.
He's actually a really good actor,
Tim
McGraw.
He's
he
good.
Really is.
He was good. What was in that Sandra
No, don't say the
Bullock
blind
show.
Did you like that movie?
I'm a sap. What can I say?
Oh.
Drink some wine, watch the movie.
Oh.
Okay.
Cry.
Lee hates that movie
you
more
didn't
than
like
I do.
Like that movie?
Lee hates it even more.
Wait, which
Why?
One?
The Sandra Bullock, Blindside, your
oh,
favorite.
Oh, no, I didn't like that. No, no.
No.
Really?
No, no.
No, I thought it was very
fine.
I thought it was very measured and safe and I
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
I saw that, first of all. That was out at the same time.
Well, it's been so much fun.
That was out at the same time as Precious, and I saw those two one after the other.
And they're such,
They're like the same movie.
Similar story, different movie.
Totally different.
But I did like her in both roles as Precious Death. And
she is great in Precious. She's a great actress.
Oh my God, unrecognizable.
Yeah.
I mean, she really becomes
no,
her character.
No. Here's what they would say: transformed.
Right.
Totally.
Monique was great in Precious.
Yes. Mariah Carey was good. Everyone was good in that movie.
Was great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tim McGraw, so you were saying you have a friend who wrote a Tim McGraw song.
Yeah, but, so I don't really know Tim and Faith. And
have you heard
I,
the song that your
I,
friend wrote?
Yes, he sang it, and I, it's,
and you were like, it's good.
I loved the way he sang
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, when you go to the Bluebird, what happens is you hear the songwriter sing their song.
Really?
Yeah. So you recognize the song, it's like, oh, that was a huge hit. But then you hear them sing it, and it's like this super stripped-down version with just an acoustic guitar.
I like
it's,
that.
It's great.
Yeah.
That's
if
great.
You're in Nashville, go to the Bluebird. You can barely get in anymore.
Okay.
When you go visit Mom and Dad.
Listen,
yeah.
I can get in.
I bet you'll get in.
I'll drop
talk
some
to
names.
Me, I'll get you in.
Yeah.
Done.
I don't even have to drop my
people.
Names. I usually drop.
I know people. Who
I usually got to drop names like Danny Bonaducci. And,
yeah.
Danny Bonaducci. Oh.
I don't know Danny Bonaducci. Who the fuck knows Danny Bonaducci?
Everybody knows Danny
have
Bonaducci.
Have you met Danny Bonaducci?
No, but I know him.
You never met the douche?
I haven't. Oh God.
That's my nickname.
Yeah. No. It's
wow.
Not.
He's the douche.
Bonaducci. Ouch.
The Badouche.
Yeah.
The Badouche. Maraduch.
Oh, you haven't met him, huh? I'm
no,
trying to
I
think
haven't.
Of what assholes in the 90s you may have met. Steven Seagal, he hit on you.
No, but yeah. I was at Spago one night back in the
wait.
Day,
this
and I turned
already.
Around, and there he was with Kelly LeBrock.
I knew it. I was going to...
That was a big night. I was there
one second Kelly
night.
LeBrock.
I thought he was
going to
hit
there.
On you because you're like the better-looking Kelly LeBrock.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh,
no.
You're so nice. Do I have to come over and like sit on your lap now?
No, you don't have to do that.
No, but
just hugs and kisses.
I went to Spago. Like, Spago back in the day was the spot at where you go and have dinner.
Not
and
the Abbey?
No, this is back in the 90s. The Abbey wasn't even there.
Oh,
well,
the
maybe
Abbey's
the Abbey was
there,
but I don't think it was there.
Who eats food at the Abbey, really? Nobody actually
no,
eats
well,
there. Cocaine,
you know,
yes.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I guess.
Food,
you have
no.
The cocaine.
Isn't it? Did the Abbey outlaw bridal showers last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unless they're men that are in bridal.
Anyway, so you're
right.
There.
Anyway, okay, so I'm there. And I turn around, and there's Steven Seagal and Kelly LeBrock next to each other, looking incredibly small. Like, I expected him
really?
To be very large. And they weren't.
He is
and
now.
Then
he's
on the
very
other
large.
Side of the restaurant was Jodie Foster.
Uh-huh.
And then.
You mean they weren't sitting together?
No.
And were you in the middle?
And then Grace Jones, as I was coming out.
Oh,
really?
Was like, up. In like some fabulous big padded shoulder thing with the
really?
The flat top mohawk.
I was inclined
it
to believe
so
Grace Jones
hot.
Didn't exist after
that's
December 31st, 1989.
I think
no.
That's great.
Well, and this was probably 1990, something like that.
And was Seagal being an asshole at dinner?
No.
Could you tell? You were totally
no, but he makes
you were spying a little.
Did he
though,
make you call?
No,
you?
I was like, oh, that well, they look familiar. Oh.
Oh, and you knew, you didn't even really, you were
like at
eh.
First, yeah, I, you know what the, no, I'm not going to say
he
anything.
Makes everyone, he makes,
I'm not
going to
say
make, was he making
right.
Everyone call him Rinpoche?
Let's see, wait,
he
I'm
makes
thinking
everyone
more womanizing
call him
guys
Rinpoche?
From,
no, Rinpoche.
Hold on, I'm running, through,
spiritual
my,
master.
I'm running
right.
Through my 90s womanizing guys here. Okay, have you
who?
Met Stallone?
No, but I.
Invited to parties?
I know people who know. Him?
Yep,
knew
that's
him
all
then.
I need to hear.
The dishiest.
And Schwarzenegger.
Listen, I'm gossiping
the
right now.
The dishiest podcast of 1993.
Oh, I love how you brought
right
up
here.
Schwarzenegger. You don't know Schwarzenegger?
I've never worked with him, but I did hear tales.
Yeah, you've heard tales.
Tales.
Did you get to meet Van Damme?
No. Hmm. No. I wasn't like
what other
that
scumbags?
Girl. Oh, well, I work with Bruce Willis.
Michael
okay.
Douglas call you?
Bruce?
Oh, Bruce Willis.
Bruce come on, Die Hard, man.
All right.
We did a
now,
movie together.
Now. As an actor, you love Bruce Willis. Why do directors hate him?
Probably because he has a strong point of view.
That's a nice way to put it. See, that's the that's I like good. You because I'm a fellow actor way of putting that.
Right.
But you know
directors
what?
Say because he's an asshole.
Right.
Well,
but
I mean, I did Armageddon with him, and Michael
right.
Bay directed him,
uh-huh.
And he, I never saw any problems there.
Have you ever listened to the commentary track to that movie?
No, is it hilarious? Should I watch it?
It's Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, Michael Bay, and basically it's Ben Affleck ripping on Michael Bay and Bruce Willis the whole time. And Bruce says like five lines.
Bruce says five things, and and Michael Bay's opinions are completely outlandish.
No, he's
hilarious.
Yeah. He's out of his mind.
And, but we're watching. It's like, why is this on? Why is this part of the Criterion Collection?
Right.
And
that's hilarious.
And that's why.
The best things on the planet to me are Michael Bay commentaries. The Bad Boys commentaries,
right?
Yeah.
Oh.
The Schwarzenegger commentaries, though.
The Schwarzenegger commentaries
for Terminator
are classic.
And
Terminator 3.
And,
Terminator 2. And
Total Recall. Yeah, are fantastic. But Ben Affleck is basically like Mystery Science Theatering the movie.
I love Mystery Science Theater.
That's like my favorite show.
Miss that show so much.
Boys,
good.
90s.
Oh,
it was
God,
good.
That was such a great
my favorite
show. But with
show
the
ever.
Original guys.
The original guys,
yeah.
Well, I like, you know, they still do live shows and tour.
Do they really?
And they watch,
That was like such a happy Saturday.
I know.
Every Saturday.
Very happy for me.
You stayed home on Saturday night?
To watch Mystery
Come on.
Science Theater.
Yeah.
You never stayed home on Saturday.
I stayed home.
I have geeky qualities. Yeah.
You stay home like I do on the weekends.
Well,
you don't anymore.
She washes her hair.
Yeah,
when you were 29 like I am, did you stay home every weekend?
No, not every weekend, no.
Yeah, no.
But
no.
Occasionally you... Well, and I think
work out
I
at the gym like
I
Friday and Saturday night.
I may have been watching repeats because I recall it coming on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was on Saturday
morning.
I'm
not up that early.
But then when they switched networks, they changed the time. Then it was on Sunday, apparently. And,
right.
Yeah, it was
And
all
we would make pancakes and watch Mystery Science Theater and roar.
Yeah, they had all the
it
old movies.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
Horrible movies.
Yeah.
Just the worst movies on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
They were priceless.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, good times.
What's the worst movie you've seen lately you howled at?
What's the worst movie I've seen lately?
That you laughed at, though. Like, so bad it was good.
Oh, wait a second. Hang on. There was something recently, and it was so bad. What the hell was it?
Was it in theaters, or was it on TV?
I feel like I watched it on television, and it was probably a DVD. Oh, those brain cells. There's been so many lost over the years. I can't remember what it was, but it was really bad.
Okay.
It was really bad. It was so bad I've forgotten it.
I
and I love a good bad movie.
You know, it's just that
I do too. Those are my favorites.
Last week, the
Samurai Cop.
The Landmark Theater in Santa Monica played a midnight showing of a movie called Samurai Cop, which was made in the early 90s. And
I remember what it was. I remember
what
movie.
Was it?
Yeah,
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It was late. I was.
Wait a minute. That movie's great.
No.
Go back and rewatch.
No.
And it was too late for me to really be watching a movie at like 3 a.m. when I'm supposed to be packing up and like hitting the road. But I had to watch a bit of it, and it was truly bad. Hilarious. Like, there's a scene, you know, Prince is a friend of mine. It's a very good friends with Prince and goes on tour with him. Great guy. You know, they're nothing against him. But it's hilarious, some of those scenes where he's like out in the woods in lacy jackets and stuff, being pensive, but posing. And it's, go watch. It's
3 a.m. is the right time to watch that movie,
too. It is.
Too.
Maybe you've been out having fun. Yeah. Maybe you've drunk a
little bit. I don't go out having fun.
You don't?
No, I don't drink.
I'm
sober.
Well, good. That's a very good
thing. Saturday night, I go to the gym. Friday night, I go to the gym.
There are other things in the gym you need to meet.
No,
yeah,
I do. I do that during the afternoon.
Afternoon delight.
Yeah.
Right.
So let me get you out of here, though. But
we didn't talk about you're doing a movie called Bad Words.
Oh,
yeah.
That was fun. Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His directorial feature debut.
Yes.
This is a big thing.
He's going to be a hell of a director. I mean, he's already a really good
director. It's getting released over Christmas now, isn't it?
Is that what it is? Because I haven't heard.
I think it's Christmas.
That'd be great. It's, you know, it's funny.
I love Jason Bateman, by the way. Have you known him a long time since you guys kind of came up together, too?
No, I'd never met him.
Isn't that crazy? He was on the Hogan Family, and then you're doing your thing. And
Never crossed paths. Always really liked his work a lot.
The town's smaller now than it used to be, I guess.
I know. Well, and you know, it is really small, and you do sort of feel like, how is it that there are certain people, how is it that you've never met? But he is such a a generous director and really smart. Yeah. And his crew loves him. They would do anything. He made me look so ugly. Like, it's crazy. I have a flaw of bangs, and I had horrible makeup. And for him, I would have done anything.
Well, I can't wait to see
it's
that.
It's nice not having
Will you come back and do this when
the
movie's coming out?
Yeah, I will, definitely.
Good.
I'll try to bring
him.
That would be nice.
Great. Would that be fun?
Yeah, that'd be great for me. Nashville, by the way, congratulations. That's
Thank
great.
You.
That's
Jesus,
great.
Too.
Very much.
We should go back in July.
And pole dancing lessons, ladies, take them.
Yes.
Pole dancing, and you can get pole kisses.
Yes.
In the form of big, welty bruises on
right.
your body.
What happened, Judith?
I fell down. The pole.
All right. Well, we're going to get Judith Hogue out of here. And please watch Nashville on ABC.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you guys.
Thank you so much for doing this.
You guys are cool.
Yeah.
I think
I'm all right.
Yeah, we're pretty cool.
You're cool.
Okay.
All right.
Good. We're cool.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Felicity. I'm here with Kieran. Kieran Darcy Smith and Felicity Price from the new film Wish You Were Here, Joel Edgerton, Teresa Palmer, Felicity Price, of course. I'm kind of nervous. I just saw the flick. I really enjoyed it a lot. I don't get nervous for a lot of these interviews, but I got to tell you, the whole story is, it's very Hitchcockian in a way. I mean, I guess that's one way to put it. I feel like that's an overused term, but it's definitely a psychological thriller. And it premieres this Friday. Everyone can go see it this Friday. And I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you. I know it's 4 years in the making, but it's a really good film.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Matthew. It means a lot. And that's not a term that has been overused by the press. It's
Not for us, anyway.
Yeah, so it's a nice one to hear.
Well, yeah, I thought it definitely had that vibe to it. And Joel Edgerton is one of my favorite actors. He's someone I've wanted to interview forever. He's amazing. And he is really, really great in this film. And I love seeing him do smaller films because he really gets to stretch his acting chops in this. Let's talk about him for a moment in this. I know he goes way back with you guys, that you guys are dear friends. How did Joel get involved? Because from what I've been told, you guys really didn't take it to him, and he was just reading your script over and over every draft, and that he asked to be involved. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's true. It's look, at the time, I mean, Joel and I do go way back. I've known him since he was 17. We went to drama school together, and he was mad. He's a godfather to our son, so he's really tight with us, and we've got a sort of a production company back at home called Blue Tongue Film, so we collaborate on all the projects, and Felicity and I had been developing the script for a couple of years, and it got to the point where we needed to find cast, and I just, I kind of made an assumption, I guess. I'm a bit rejection averse, and I assumed that he wouldn't want to do it or be able to do it, because at the time he was being offered everything under the sun over here, and he'd already done a ton of Australian films and low budget films, and I just didn't think he'd say yes, and so I kind of was too shy to ask, and I was actually away on a sort of a trip with Joel, and at the time was talking a lot about cast and showing him names that I was tossing around and discussing with our producer Angie Fielder, and then he just sort of said to me, have you ever thought about me in this role? And I was, I sort of picked myself up off the floor and I said, I'd love that. I would love that. And he said, well, I'd love to do it. And so that was it. And so I just rang my producer, and then it was game on from then. But I just never thought he'd do it. So I was a bit shy.
How did you get involved with your producer? And obviously once you get Joel Edgerton, it's really easy probably to go out and get the money you need to make to make this film. But I know at first when you guys were writing this 4 years ago, your idea was just to do something really low budget, almost documentary style-esque. I mean, it comes off very Darren Aronofsky with the it's not cinema verite so much, or documentary verite. It's more proactive. But explain to me how you got involved with your producer and what the funding process was from day one to where you get Joel Edgerton to where you get Teresa Palmer. How does that work?
Yeah. I'll talk you through it. It's interesting, though, that you brought up Aronofsky, because one of the things I kept bringing up with our DP and all of our heads of department and with our producer is, you know, Darren Aronofsky talked about the wrestler as being proactive documentary, which is exactly what you've just said. And it was something that I was incredibly influenced by. I mean, we were also incredibly influenced by the Danes and like Susanna Bier in particular and a few other filmmakers. But going back to your question, like we've got a fairly, you know, we're really lucky in Australia that we've got a government that supports filmmakers and filmmaking. And so they've got an agency down there, Screen Australia, that's obligated. They're given a certain amount of money and they have to allocate it to various projects. So they'd been on board from an early stage with developing the scripts, giving us some money to develop the script, and we were part of a lab, a writing lab down there called Aurora, which is, I guess, similar to the Sundance Lab. And so we were already in the pipeline with the agencies down there, and they had supported a lot of Blue Tongue stuff over the years and you know, the shorts that I'd done and so on. So, and we knew everybody in there. So we're really lucky to have that. And so when it comes to getting the film financed for production, there's a number of hoops you got to jump through and boxes you got to tick. You got to have an Australian, a local distributor in place. You've got to have a sales agent in place. And then they look at the team, and then they look at the material, and of course they do look at the cast. But by and large, they look at the material and the team. And you know, Angie Fielder came on board, I guess, a couple of years into us developing, and she came on board because we needed a producer attached to apply for development funding. And she was someone we were aware of. She'd worked on a few Blue Tongue films, shorts. She produced David Michaud's first two short films, which went off to premiere at Sundance, and then she produced Spencer Suss's short that went off to Sundance as well. So she had a great pedigree, and the agencies really liked her. And fortunately, she just responded to the script in a really favourable way, and all of a sudden we were out doing it properly. But initially, yeah, we were going to make the film for like $100,000. We were going to scratch around and try and get friends and family and max out credit cards. And I was going to play Dave and Felicity was going to play Alice, and we were going to rent a house in the suburbs as our hero house and live in it.
And I was pregnant with our first child, and my character Alice was pregnant, and we just were like, we're just going to get it in the can and we'll max out credit cards. And then when Angie came on, she was just like, no way, we're doing it properly, we're getting proper money. We're not going to waste this script on doing it that way.
Yeah, and so then we ended up going through the, you know, the application process for getting finance for production. And so it meant that we had to take the project to Cannes to get a sales agent involved. We had a local distributor in place, which was very lucky. So we had that. And we went to Cannes, and we needed to go there with some cast attached. And so, you know, it was only a couple of weeks before we went to Cannes that Joel put his hand up, and so that got the ball rolling. And he was a really viable piece of talent in the marketplace. And then Teresa, it was just fortune. I just happened to be at a dinner that she was at, and you know, at the time we were racking our brains about who could play Steph, and I just sat opposite her at this dinner and started chatting with her, and I just recognised there was so much of the character kind of already in her, and there was just something I identified, and so I just rang her the next day and said, would you be interested in taking a look at something? And it was just lucky because, you know, her agents were keen on her doing something smaller and Australian, and she was very keen on that and wanting to get her teeth into something very dramatic. I think she'd just come off I'm Number 4 or something like that at the time, and so it just spoke to her at the right point in time, and she just straight away said, yes, let's do it. And then it was just a matter of availability. Like, we had to try and find a window where Joel and Teresa were both available, and then it all sort of fell into place. But it came together very smoothly, and we were very lucky. I feel like we kind of won the lottery.
Well, that's movie magic right there. That's all the luck coming together at once, everything falling into place. Let me ask you a question. You were acting for years. You were looking to do something complicated, a more complicated role. What was the beginning of this process for you, where you thought you needed to write yourself something?
I guess I'd actually just come off working on another film, and I'd been playing this. It was a short film, but I was playing this French character, and I guess in the that story, she was having that kind of a bit of a meltdown, and I just had enjoyed playing that character so much. And I had been writing for a long time, and I just guess I thought I was doing a lot of theatre, and I kind of really wanted to break out of theatre, and I had done film and television, but I guess that I had been very involved in the theatre in Australia, and I just wanted to kind of be able to. Sometimes it's hard to sort of, if you're very involved in one kind of medium, it's hard to sort of break out of it, and I really felt the need that I needed to break out of it, and I knew that I needed to write a low budget film so that we could make it within 5 years rather than 10. So when I kind of sat down and first came up with the idea, the bare bones of the idea for what became Wish You Were Here, I was thinking that I was trying to create a low budget film, so small cast, few locations, although of course we did end up shooting in Cambodia, but that was kind of the germ of my idea.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is an experience I've had where you go to auditions and you read scripts that are not very good, and then you also don't get the job, and you're like, I could write better scripts than this, or
well,
I could write a script just as bad as this and give myself a role.
Yeah. It's true. You know what? I was so sick of hearing myself and my actress friends say, I was sick of hearing us all say, there's no roles for women, or the roles for women are really thin, and men can't write for women, which is not totally true, but, there are, it's almost a cliche. I think things are changing a lot now, but it has been a cliche for a long time that, female roles, they're sort of relegated to being the girlfriend, and there's not much action that goes on with their character. So, I was just so sick of hearing myself and other people say that I was just like, God damn it, I'm going to write the role. I got to put my money where my mouth is, because I can't just complain all the time. I've actually got to change things. So that's where I come from too.
And I'll just chip in. Really, that's how the whole. I'm not sure if you're aware of the Blue Tongue Films and some of the earlier shorts that we've been involved with. But it all started from that same place. It started with Joel and his brother Nash Edgerton and myself and one other guy. Joel and I had just come out of drama school and we'd done no work. And Nash and his friend Tony were just starting out in stunts, and we all wanted to put something on tape. That sort of showed what we could do, what we thought we could do. And so I'd written a few things at drama school that I ended up performing for my graduation and so on. And I realized, you can do it yourself rather than reach out and grab other people's material and look for other people's material. So we just knocked up this little story and went out in the street and shot it. And it sort of just changed our whole lives in that it made us realize you can create work yourself, and it had the desired effect. It got everyone's attention, and then everything sort of platformed from there. So, you really can write your own material, but you've also and you should. And in Australia, it's a bit of a cottage industry. There's not much work, and you're going to get a lot more opportunities if you're out there trying to create the work for yourself.
There is a real culture in Australia where actors are very busy creating work in the theatre, in film and in television. And a lot of great talent and a lot of great projects come from that. And I guess it because there is, not a great deal of work. It's a really small industry. And, it seems to me that actors here in the States, they often spend a lot of time going to classes and, great actors are professionals. They're going to a lot of classes. And there is just not that sort of thing in Australia. There really aren't classes for professional actors, so people they're just creating work and directing things, producing things, writing things, and acting in things.
Are you guys by the way, I want to remind everybody, Wish You Were Here is in theaters Friday. Kieran Darcy Smith, Felicity Price, I'm with them now. Kieran, I was going to ask you, and then Felicity, you can field this too if you'd like. Your next project, I'm sure after the success at Sundance of this film, I'm sure you're getting offered a bunch of films or people are sending you scripts to look at. Your next project, so is this not going to be a co-writing effort? Are you going to direct something? And Felicity, are you going to take acting work outside of working together now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course. But we will still work together as well.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a movable feast, Matthew, to be honest. It's like I've got, I've read, you know, God, I don't know, maybe 1,000 scripts since Sundance. And, you know, we've got really good teams here looking after us. And we've moved here to LA and we've really set up with our two little kids. And it is very positive and optimistic and great and very, you know, very active, I guess. And by now, I'm attached to direct three different projects and they're out at various stages of casting and finance and so on. And you never really know what's going to go first. These are all really wonderful scripts and we're getting, you know, they're with great companies and, you know, one of them will fall into place before the other and then we'll be off making it, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later. But I just don't know what's going to happen. And in the meantime, Felicity is, she's actually got some money to write a second draft of a feature script she wrote, which is terrific. And, you know, I'd love to direct that. Yep.
We have another project that we can't really talk into much detail about, though, that we...
Thank you.
like we're about to embark on writing together as well. So, I mean, you know, we will certainly be collaborating a lot. And, you know, that's the thing about being married as well is that you kind of can't help but collaborate with each other because you know everything that's going on and, you know, even if you're not officially collaborating, you're reading and helping out and giving notes and all of that kind of thing.
Well, let me ask you, by the way, that's funny that you brought up the marriage thing and I was just putting two to two together and you're Australian and PJ Hogan and his wife make films together, also Australian. And PJ, by the way, is a great example of someone who can write women. Let me ask you, is that something that works really, because you brought up in Australia, you kind of have to make your own projects as a cottage industry. Is it more likely for you to be a successful couple making films in Australia than here, or do you think that can translate over here and does translate over here?
Oh, I think it could easily translate. I think the thing with being in Australia is that it's kind of, I wouldn't say easy, because I don't think any part of filmmaking is easy, you know, I think it's you can really get your first, you can get kick-started in Australia. Part of that is because there is government subsidising for film. So, I mean, you know, even though it's really important to put your big cast in and there's not such pressure, I mean, it seems that here, even $1 million film, you still need to get some kind of A-list cast attached. That does seem to, you know, seem to be a big part of the industry here. Whereas in Australia, I feel like you can really get a kickstart. And then if your kickstart, like ours, wish you were here, and, you know, certainly for PJ Hogan, you know, if your kickstart sort of translates internationally and then you get access to this world and this industry over here, then hopefully you can make the collaboration, you know, continue.
Yeah, and just on that too, I mean, like, I guess, you know, subsequent to Wish You Were Here, we, you know, without airing our dirty laundry, I mean, it sort of, you know, like it cost us a lot of money to spend 4 years writing and developing that without really doing too much other work. You know, we ended up, you know, maxing out credit cards and so on and so forth. So we've kind of, and we've got two little kids, so we've kind of got to, work. And the opportunities here, there's a lot more material. There's a lot more scripts to read and to consider. You know, it's not like, but, you know, the last thing you want to do is put your hand up and say, yeah, I'll direct, you know, I don't know, whatever, Final Destination 24 for the money. You want your second film or your third film, whatever, to have real integrity. So you've got to think really hard about it. But there's much more opportunity for scouring the material here than there is at home. At home, there's no scripts floating around, really. You've got to really come up with the work yourself. And so if we were to stay in Australia, we'd be able to get another film up, but then you have to go through the whole process of writing it and you know, the years in the pipeline with the agencies and so on. So it takes a while to get your second film made back at home, whereas, you know, within 12 months of Sundance, I am now attached to a few different projects, and one of them will go soon. It's good material, you know what I mean? And that wouldn't have happened if we'd stayed there. But that's not to say that we discount working in Australia again at all. You know, we need to keep working and we need to feed our kids at the same time and remain creatively active and interested in the material. And right here, right now, there's just that much more of it, I guess.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. What I'm trying to think here is there's a lot of people. I'm sure you guys had projects before this. You were also working on trying to put together. You send out to producers. You send out to other companies, and you try to get funding and you try to get made. And Felicity, I'm sure there's a lot of directors that you've tried to work with. Whatever is when you have a film like this where it gets a ton of critical acclaim, plays really well at Sundance, and now all of a sudden all these people are returning your phone calls. What's your sensibility on that? How do you feel about that? It's a weird part of the business where you get hot all of a sudden.
I'm happy just to take the call.
Yes.
Look, at the end of the day, it's incredibly reaffirming and gratifying and wonderful, but I guess you've also just got to be practical and pragmatic about it. Yeah, there's has been a real change in the landscape for us, and that's terrific, but you've just got to be careful about what you do with it and how you play. Like I say, not just take the first thing. I mean, I could have got us out of debt already within this 12 months by taking a lesser job, but you're working on building a career here, and so you do have to be careful. But it is, I'll be honest, it's a wonderful, this is a very, very special time in our lives. You know, we're sitting here at the moment in our house in Laurel Canyon, and it's, you know, that we've got, I've got like 89 unanswered emails, and it's really active and busy and creative and special. So answer your question. It's all positive.
I think it's wonderful to get to know people as well. I mean, it's always hard if you don't have a kind of project to show people to start the relationship off. It's very hard for them to know, you are someone I want to start a relationship with. But once you do, then it's great to start that. But then I think it does take time to sort out what is going to be the right project to work on together. So it's great to sort of start those relationships and go, yeah, I'd love to work with you. You know, this would be great. But what is that project going to be? And it seems to be that can take a bit of time.
Where do you guys... go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, I think a lot of the last 12 months has been about relationship building and, sourcing. I don't know, just like getting the lay of the land here, getting people to know us to know them. And, it takes a little while. And but I think there's a run on now, and it feels like we're finally settled. You know, the kids are in school, we've got the house, we're here and we're working now as a unit. So it takes a while to set that up.
Well, I was going to ask you, when you say relationship building, now you have a hit movie, you have a critically hit movie that's coming out Friday, I Wish You Were Here. But before that, you're four years writing this film and putting it together. How do you network in those situations? How do you build relationships when you don't have the Sundance critical hit and you need to meet people or you want to meet people? What advice would you give young people that are trying to make friends in this business?
We met a lot of great people when we got into Kieran mentioned that our script got into a script development lab in Australia, and we met a lot of really fantastic people through that lab, one of whom was Ted Hope, the independent, well-known independent film producer who really loved the project, loved us, and became a real mentor for us. And then, now he's executive producing one of Kieran's projects. So, for us, kind of getting involved in that development program was really important. I think part of it, though, for us was that, we did have to have some of the time where, because when you're writing, there is a point where you need to walk into the room, close the door, sit in front of the computer and write. And I personally have a kind of the sort of personality, and, this is like many, many actors, like you just want to be with people all the time and talking. You kind of want to be socializing and meeting people. But there's a part of writing where you just have to go into the room, close the door, write. And I think we had to kind of put faith in that process because we knew that everything was about the script. If we could nail the script, if we could get the script as good as it could possibly be, then we were going to make a good film, and then that was going to give us access to the world we wanted. So for us creating our own work and writing it, there was a lot of time where we had to go, okay, this period is about us creating the project, and that will give us the energy and the heat that we need.
That's right.
Yeah, and look, just on that, there's a lot of you really do have to roll the dice at some point. Look, put it this way: when I first started, with making short films, and we'd gotten into that sort of world of short filmmakers, and knew a lot of people who were very, very good, and then they were at a point where they'd made a few short films. What do I do now? They all wanted to develop feature material, but they were in a position whereby they could suddenly start working in TVCs and doing more music videos and so on and so forth. And you have to kind of make a choice there. Are you going to go down that road and keep working behind the camera and building up your skill set and so on and your experience? Or are you going to elect to, you know, go flat broke and not make any money for a number of years, live on credit cards and do your laps as a writer? And I made the latter choice because, personally, I just recognised that scripts was everything. It doesn't really matter how you shoot it or, you know, you've got to recognise whether or not you're capable of directing. I mean, but I felt, you know, with all due modesty, I felt like I was across that and I felt comfortable and confident. So I just thought, what do people go to the movies for? They go for the story, and they don't care about how, you know, flashy your camera moves are and this and that. It's about nutting down character and story and telling a story well. And so I thought, you know, screenplay is everything. That's where I'm going to put my attention. And so I just, you know, I was doing, you know, my day job as an actor here and there, which is, you know, kind of thin on the ground in Australia for anyone, and chipping away and spending a lot of time on sets. But mostly I was just head down writing, and I did that for many, many years. And my advice to answer your question to anybody who wants to sort of to meet the right people and start these relationships and sort of gain access to the right people is let the material do the work. And so you've got to create the material. And really, really, my ultimate advice to anyone is get yourself, you know, capable of directing something so that you know that you can handle cast and camera and you can tell a story within the medium, but then put all of your focus on your writing and come up with a piece of material that is going to open doors, because that's what's going to get you into a lab like Sundance Lab or there's a bunch of other ones, or it's going to land on a producer's desk or an agent's desk. I mean, the writer on one of these projects I'm doing that I'm attached to direct, he just happened to meet an agent when he was on a hunting trip once, and, you know, he spent, you know, a couple of tours of duty in Iraq, and he'd just come back from that when he was on this hunting trip, and he just to sort of get it out of his system, he'd written this screenplay, and then he gave it to this guy to read, never thinking he'd ever read it. And then 2 years later, the guy rings him back out of the blue and says, "Man, I just happened to stumble across your script and read it, and it's amazing. And can you move to California?" And so he moved up, and suddenly he was being represented by one of the biggest agents in the country, and now he's gone on to have a stellar career. But it was the material that did it, that, you know, the networking. I mean, sure, there was luck he met this guy, but if he hadn't have had a screenplay, it wouldn't have amounted to anything.
That's right. That's really good advice. My final question for you, I'll let you guys go. Wish you were here in Theaters Friday. I'm here with Kieran Darcy Smith and Felicity Price. And, of course, Joel Edgerton stars in the film with Teresa Palmer and also Felicity Price. So my last question for you guys is, obviously, I know everyone's been asking you, oh, how's it to work together as a couple? Well, obviously it went fine because you had two kids during the course of things, so I'm guessing the romance was okay. So my question, though, for you is, and I don't hear anyone asking you guys this, is before that, when you guys met, when you guys started dating, is this something you always wanted to do, is work together? Were you always working together in some way or another? For people out there that don't believe that they can work together with their spouse or their girlfriends or their boyfriends or whatever, how do you look at that, and how was it for you guys at the start?
Pregnant pause while we both consider how to answer.
We could write a book on how our relationship started, but it's a whole other story. But
we met working on a kind of silly little acting job, and
And I guess, look, I mean, we both are very creative people who love to be completely absorbed by whatever the creative project is that we are currently working on. And so we were always smashing ideas around at home and talking about, oh, I've got this idea, I want to write this. And, you know, that was kind of the world that we had between us, is this sort of very interested in batting around ideas and brainstorming. And I guess, you know, Kieran had already spent about 10 years writing a project that he wanted to be his first feature, but it was like a $10 million film, and it was becoming very clear that he was not going to be able to raise that finance as a first-time feature director. So I kind of smashed out this idea as a treatment, and then we decided to sort of embark on it together, and I guess he took a leap of faith. I felt that he took a leap of faith in me as a writer, because I really felt that I had been doing a lot of writing, but I really felt that he knew a lot more about writing film. And in the beginning, I mean, I guess collaborations can not work and they can really work. And for us, it just really, really worked. And it really worked that we lived together because, again, we were the kind of people who just love to live a project, and so we were able to live it, and we were able to talk about it, you know,
all the time.
On car trips to go to family barbecues while we're cooking the dinner, and later when we were having kids while we're changing nappies, and, you know, I guess it was that living and breathing it thing that we personally loved. I would encourage anyone to get out there and try it if they really respect. But, you know, of course, respect, mutual respect is really important.
I was going to say, I think the key word's got to be respect, and you have to take away the ego, right?
Totally, because, you know, of course, there's times where you're like, why did you rewrite my idea? You know, I thought that idea was really good. But ultimately, you're serving the project. You're serving the story, and you've got to have that as the kind of the clarity in the collaboration, is that this is only about the story. So if someone cuts one big scene, decides that we've got to cut one big scene that you've just spent, you know, 3 days writing, that's okay. We're serving the story.
And that is only ever going to come from not only respect but trust. You know, I'd watched Felicity. Like, there was never an intention or an agenda, rather, for us to, you know, write a film together. But, you know, like Felicity said, we were just always spitballing ideas around, and then this idea came up, was like, we can do this together. But by then I knew enough about Felicity. I'd seen her direct a couple of theatre pieces, and I'd heard her critique a lot of films and theatre productions, and I knew she was savvy, and I knew she had her head screwed on, and I knew she could write. And so I trusted her, and she trusted me, and trust is everything in filmmaking. It's certainly the key thing with directing. You want your cast to trust you and follow you. You want your you want to trust them. You want your heads of department. It's the whole game is and creating an environment of trust. And so, yeah, you got to leave your ego at the door and just serve, as Felicity says, serve the idea and try and, yeah.
And that transferred also to when we were in production, because Kieran was directing his first feature film. He directed a number of shorts that had done really well, but this was his first feature film, and I was playing my first lead role in a feature film. And so, again, for both of us, we were both having to go, okay, I really trust you. And both of us knew that the other one could do it, absolutely. There was no concerns there, but there was still a leap of faith involved.
Well, thank you guys so much. Kieran Darcy Smith, Felicity Price. Wish You Were Here is going to be in theaters Friday. Joel Edgerton, Teresa Palmer, Felicity Price, directed by Kieran Darcy Smith. Great film. You guys are the salt of the earth. Thank you very much for doing this. I hope you guys come back on sometime.
Thanks so much. Matthew. It's nice to talk. Thanks for the support.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, guys. Have a good one, okay?
Bye. You too.
Thank you very much. Next week, we'll have a whole new show from Taste Chicago here at 603 North Hollywood Way in Burbank.